been two weddings and a funeral week. Had you know about the wedding last week, right? Who can forget? And then we had a wedding last night. Clarence Wolgemuth, some of you may know, comes to the second service. He is 94 years old. Married a woman he had met when he was her husband's squadron leader in Aisha, Japan in 1954. Kathy Nickel. And they were married here last night in a small ceremony, and they just had family and friends come over, but they are happy for us all to know and to celebrate. After that ceremony, they invited me to a reception, like the reception we had last night, and or last week, last Sunday, and we told stories. There were just about 18 or so, 20 people around this sort of U-shaped table, so it was easy for everyone to hear if one person was talking, and so we started telling stories, and they began, as they always do, with funny anecdotes. Kathy's children were there, and several of Clarence, I should say Wogie to his friends, several of Wogie's friends were agitating them to tell some funny and revealing stories about their mother. And so they started telling some funny stories about their mother. And then I remember her youngest daughter said, "I can't believe I told you that story when I could have told you this story that tells you so much more about my mother. The stories, what I'm telling you, began to expand." You know what I'm talking about? And became like a parable of their mother's life. You know? The stories didn't tell enough that they were telling. It seems like we always start out with the smaller stories, and then the more we tell, the more we think of telling the larger stories. That's like this funeral. A woman who I did not know, I married her daughter a year ago, a little less than a year ago, and she called me up. She's from Wilmington. She said, "My mother died suddenly and tragically, and haven't really talked to her since the wedding. And could you come help us?" And they told me some stories, and some of those stories were very sad and tragic stories about their mother's struggle with addiction. But that wasn't the whole story. And I think that's one of the tasks, not only that I as a pastor bring into a situation of grief like that, but I think that's one of our tasks as followers of Jesus. To tell not only the better story, but the truer story. Right? Death doesn't have, what do we say, the last word. And neither do any of the sins or addictions or mistakes or problems, neither do they have the last word on our lives. It took a while, but this family in grief began to tell me stories about how their mother, their wife, learned to paint and loved to paint everything in vivid living colors. And they told me this wonderful story about how she would paint dents in the wall, and she would paint over them, not to fill in the dents, but she would make of these dents and these problems, you know, and the cracks in the wall, she would make things, vines and butterflies and flowers. I like that story better. It's a truer story. They said that she would knit together holes in clothing, her husband's clothing particularly, and she would knit butterflies into those holes. I like that story. And so I told it at her funeral as the rain pounded down. drove sideways. It felt like we were sort of the last Christians on the earth. We all huddled around our ashes as the rain pounded us and went under the tent, and we all placed our hands on that urn full of ashes of her body and dedicated and blessed her spirit to God. It's a truer story. And you know, there are even bigger stories than that. The story at that funeral, for instance, was a story about the grandbaby that this mother's daughter was carrying, the grandbaby that she never got to know. No, but she did get to see her. It was one of the best. You know, sometimes you see those ultrasound pictures and they're like, oh, look, it's my baby. And you're like, okay, if you say so, looks kind of like a train wreck and a cloud. And this is a baby's face. It was utterly amazing. The mother that we buried her body, she died with that picture right beside her of her unborn grandbaby. She got to see this child. And they'll tell this child, no doubt, stories about her grandmother. I hope they tell the truest stories. And perhaps stories about her grandmother before her. I want to invite you to think about your story, not just the story of your life, but the larger story of, well, your people. Our people. It's a story of, it's a genealogical story. You don't necessarily have to trace through your roots, do you? But it is helpful to know a bigger story. I remember when my firstborn daughter was born, I realized I didn't know enough about that bigger story. And so I started getting into genealogy. Never had before. I think because my grandfather on my father's side was the prodigal son who never came back. And he'd been cut off from the rest of the family, and I was afraid of asking too many questions. You know what I'm talking about? I didn't want to find out. And one of the things that I found out when I started probing a little bit was that there were so many women in, especially my father's family, who were strong, powerful, just like my daughter. I wasn't embarrassed to tell her that story of a great-grandfather who had been just so frustrated by a bad business deal that he went down into a mine shaft and blew his head off and left a wife with 6 children and 1 on the way in 1912. And her oldest daughter said she was a woman before her time, Alice Neal. Cameron was her maiden name, and our son, Eli, bears her maiden name. It's a story of power and grace, the story of my family. Not always a pretty one, right? Not always the kind of tale where all the facts are dressed up, but I love telling my daughter, you come from good stock. Because the best stories are not the stories that are dressed up and cleaned up, right? The best stories are the stories about how when we had to dig deep, right? When nothing was left, we managed to find something. That's the kind of people we are. You live in a story like that, and it's, I think we're gathered around this table of remembrance about our story. What a tragic thing it is to go through life and not know who you are, where you came from. I was thinking about these larger stories in which we live, and I thought about another genealogy story. Does anybody remember Roots, Alex Haley's Roots that came out? It was 1976. It was right around the time we were celebrating the 200th birthday of this country. And then we got another story. A story that could have been just a story about shame and tragedy, but it was more than that. About a family that had its roots in a kidnapping and enslavement. Everybody remembers his name, right? Kunta Kinte. Not another name that he had been given. I found a couple of quotes. You know, as a white southern boy, that was an interesting story to gather around, and gather around it we did. I don't remember reading it. I remember watching it on that miniseries that they put together the following year. It was 1977. I was 13. Just coming of age, finding out about this larger story in which I played a part. Right? And let me just give you a couple of lines from that story. But first, I'll read you a line from another one that we love. This one is perhaps a story of fiction, but perhaps, as all good stories of fiction, there's more truth here than might meet the eye. This is from the movie 10,000 BC, and a guardian is telling a son who never knew his father about his father. He says, "A good man draws a circle around himself and cares for those within, his woman, his children. Other men draw a larger circle and bring within their brothers and sisters from the tribe. But some men," he said, "have a great destiny. They must draw around themselves a circle that includes many, many more. And your father was one of these men. You must decide for yourself whether you are as well." This is that larger story into which God is inviting us this day. And now I'll read those quotes from this landmark story in our country's history, just as we were celebrating 200 years of manifest destiny. This was a quote that Kunta Kinte remembered when he lived in a village in the Gambia where he grew up. Not a perfect place, not always a wonderful time. He was grieving his grandmother's death, and his father said that there were three groups of people that live in every village. First, there were those you could see walking around, eating, sleeping, and working. Second were the ancestors, whom Grandma Yesa had now joined. And the third people, who are they? Asked Kunta. The third people, said Omoro, are those waiting to be born. People we don't even know. Waiting to be born. Waiting for us to help narrate their part in the story by the way we live. By the way we inherit the story from our past. What a tragic thing it is not to know. What a tragic thing it is to go through life day after day waiting for death, really. Just sort of marking time, so to speak. Do you remember the movie Groundhog Day about Bill Murray, you know, the newscaster, weathercaster? He was kind of condemned to live February 2nd over and over and over again until he gets it right. And he just couldn't get it right. One night he's at a bar and he's sitting there drowning his sorrows in a beer. And he said, "What if every day was just the same thing over and over again?" And this fellow sitting beside him, who's not condemned to live day after day on February 2nd, says, "Yep. That's pretty much the way of it." What a tragic thing. Kunta Kinte goes to a funeral of a fellow slave, a nameless slave known only by the work he was required to do, gardener, until he died. Kunta Kinte wondered what the gardener's true name had been, the name of his African forefathers, and to what tribe he had belonged. He wondered if the gardener himself had known. More likely, he died as he had lived, without ever learning who he really was. As they trudged silently back from the graveyard, Kunta thought how the family and close friends of one who had died in Jufur in the Gambia would wail and roll in ashes within their huts while the other villages danced outside. For most African people believe that there could be no sorrow without happiness, no death without life. That sounds like another story we know. In that cycle that his own father had explained to him when his beloved grandma Yesa had died, his heart sank. Until he decided a moment later that this would become another of the many things he would one day tell Kizzy, his daughter, about the homeland she would never see. We are fearful of our stories, of all that they tell. But here is a story, our story, about the beginnings in, of course, the book of Genesis, that encourages us not to fear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And what does Jesus say? The truth shall set you free. We are held by our fear of telling the whole truth about our people. I can tell you that going through this genealogy experience was like walking through a kind of minefield. I remember when my Aunt Marge said, "Well, you know, your grandmother, who was actually my step-grandmother, though I never called her that, because Alice Neal Cameron, the woman I told you about, she died when my father was 4. None of us cousins ever knew her, although several of us named our children after her. We knew Mama Virgie is who we knew, but my Aunt Marge said, "Oh, you know, that was the second and third wives. There was another 16-year-old that your grandfather married and then abandoned right away." I thought, "Oh my word, I don't think I want to hear any more of this." My father this week is heading down to Birmingham, Alabama to see if he can search to find that family. Ann Riley was her name. So maybe we can affect a kind of reunion and find the truth that perhaps will set us free. How about you? Here is a profound story of our origins. I know that Genesis begins, of course, with the creation of the world, but gosh, you know, sometimes that doesn't feel like our story. Well, that's just everybody's story. It's not until Genesis 12, actually, three chapters before this passage that Tom read to us, that the real story of the Bible begins. Our story, the story of our family, the story of your family and my family, the story of Abram and Sarai, these nomadic wanderers from Mesopotamia, from Babylon. We call it by a different name this day. Iraq is where our people come from. This is the family that God chose and God promised that there would be no end to them. They would litter the earth, and that they would have a home of promise. And then the rest of the Bible becomes a story about this family. And when we gathered Wednesday in the Simpson Center, we got a group gathered for Bible study, and we've been looking at these passages, and the first thing that the group noticed was, man, there's some fine print in this story, starting with the parts that we didn't read. Did you catch it? Did you catch that we were skipping some verses? Did you see that in the... Remember we talked before, you got to be on your toes. You got to watch for this stuff. Here, can I read to you those verses we skipped? "Then the Lord said to Abram, 'Know for certain that for 400 years, say it with me, for 400 years, your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and that they will be enslaved and mistreated there.'" Oh, by the way, there's some fine print in the story, but this isn't the story. Even 400 years, even 4 centuries, that's not the story we tell, is it? We don't tell the story of slavery. We tell the story of liberation. We tell the story of Exodus through the waters. The story of God saying no to Pharaoh's armies. The story of the slave masters giving away all that they had and sending us on our way. And that was a story that would resonate later as well. for our people. That's our story. Yes, there's a but. There were a couple of other buts that we noticed in the Bible study. But Abram said in verse 2, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me? Can you say that with me? God, what can you give me?
God,
what can you give me? Don't be afraid. This is part of our story. We've got chutzpah. Right? God tells us this promise. God's got some fine print in here, and we're like, well, God, this is our people. We are engaged. We are not just passive participants in this story. We rage at God sometimes. God, what can you give me here? How will I know? Of course, God will come right back with some questions. I loved the phrase, come and see. That's the way this story begins in chapter 12. God says, I want you to pick up stakes. I want you to leave everything you've ever known, the land, the people you've ever known, and I want you to come to a place. Do you know what God says next? I'll show you. I'm not going to tell you. I'll have to show you. That's our story. Yeah, there's some fine print. And I'll tell you what, my father once told me, he said, I think the most devastating horror story in the world would be your future that you can't change. How'd you like to know that? Would you like to know if God showed up and said, I'll tell you what's going to happen the rest of today, tomorrow, the next 10 years, day you're going to die, how you're going to die? Would you like to know? I would not. I would not. And not because I'm afraid, because I like the truth in Jesus that sets me free, even from some sort of condemnation of a future I don't even know, because God is calling me to create a future together with God. I like the fact that God has the future in mind, but there's an invitation I have and you have each day to follow those stars that God calls us to gaze under in prayer and wide wonder. Count them, you can't. Count them if you can, but you can't. I love there's a passage in Ephesians 3 says, God, you can do far more than we can even imagine or ask. God, what will you give me? How will I know? Come, follow me. Come and see, the angel says to the women who show up at the tomb on Sunday, and they say, and the angel says, he's not here. Come and see for yourself. The disciples, the would-be disciples, come and they say, where are you staying, Jesus? And Jesus says, come and see. I'll show you. It's an adventure. That's the kind of people we are. We're adventurers. We pull up stakes. We're ready to go at a moment's notice when God calls us to do something. It was interesting. I've had a busy week, as I've told you this week. I've been going in lots of different directions. I was sitting down at my desk and Will Leister came in and he said, hey, how's it been going? I said, well, my life's not my own. And, you know, I was sitting there complaining about the fact that I wasn't controlling my calendar. And Will said, yep, spoken like a disciple of Jesus Christ, that you are. Huh? Your life's not your own. And that's okay. That's okay. I never know when the next call is going to come from. I never know the next opportunity to have Christ call me to pull up stakes, and there's an adventure that awaits. No matter what the past has been, it doesn't define me. This week I got to go and see a woman who's been caring for her husband for 6 years with Alzheimer's. And some of us had visited her, but it's the first time they've received communion in a long time. And I opened the communion case and I told them every time I opened that case, I said, my father-in-law gave me this case, this communion case. He's here with us now. He died tragically last year, but he's with us. That wasn't a sad time. This man, some of you may know him, his last name is Dick, right? Right, Jane? Anybody remember? Anybody remember his name? Dave. Thank you. I can tell you what, there are parts of his mind that may be gone, but boy, he can sing like nobody's business. We finished communion, we sang "How Great Thou Art," and Dave shook the walls of that room. I didn't come to bring a blessing. The blessing was there. That's the kind of people we are. We don't have to manufacture this. God sweeps us up. And you are that people. Look at the stars, right? Do you remember that verse? Do you see it on the front of the bulletin here? Look up at the sky and count the stars, so shall your offspring be. And Paul says in Galatians 3:28 and 29, in Christ there is no male or female, no slave, no free, no Gentile, no Jew, for we are all what? One in Christ Jesus. You are His offspring, the offspring of Abraham and Sarah. You're part of this family. This is your family. This adventurous spirit, these people whom God calls not to safety. There may be some slavery involved. Your life will not be your own. But to something beyond your wildest dreams. I think that's what salvation means. To take your place in this family, the family of God. So we do a baptism. Have you ever heard us talk about somebody's name at baptism? And I'll say, what name do you give this child? They'll say, Patrick Bowman Stith. That was my maiden name when I was baptized. Patrick Bowman Stith. And then the preacher says, Patrick Bowman? Doesn't say the last name. You know why? Because we have a new last name. Christian. I belong to Christ. That's what salvation means. You claim His claim on you. Do you do that this day? I want to share with you a statement about this family here at Whatcote. We've been dreaming and trying to think about God's vision and God's mission for us. And I just wanted to share what we came up with last week as we thought about this new call to pull up stakes and what it is that we are called to do as a church. Listen to this. God is calling us to welcome all people, to passionately pursue Jesus Christ, and to share His love with others. You like the sound of that? Invitation? Are you ready to pull up stakes? To take your place in the family of God? To passionately pursue, never catch, never to catch or to clutch or to claim Jesus Christ, to constantly be pulling up stakes, to constantly be in this passionate pursuit and to share, never to hold on, but always to share. Come to this table and remember who you are. Amen.